Diversity.
You have caused confusion.
Oh, trash is more odd.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this emergency stream. I have a pretty stacked lineup for you. Joining us fresh from their own show, which got a huge audience, by the way, is two of the Lotus Eaters, Carl Benjamin himself and Dan Tubbs. So welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
And also joining us is Mark. How are you doing, Mark? Been a while.
Indeed. Very well, thank you.
And yeah, I mean, this kind of caught me a little bit unawares. If you don't know, I'm actually kind of sort of off this week because the missus is away and I'm at home. I'm not at the lodge. So it's not a normal week. And I've been knocking myself out with melatonin every night to make sure I get up in the morning. And so I must have been one of the last people in the world to find out because I missed this breaking last night. So I woke up to it. And I was, you know, checking, you know, and I was like, oh, my God, this has happened, you know. So this was one of those things that I kind of missed as it was emerging. So I wasn't there for the, you know, for the breaking story. But my gosh, this is, I haven't watched the footage. I don't watch footage like that. And I still haven't watched the footage of the Ukrainian girl either, just because you don't need that sort of thing in your life, I think. It's a shocking thing. And as you guys were saying, you know, when you're a dad, when you've got kids yourself, the world changes a little bit. And I think you take stories like this in a very different way. And that was my immediate thought. One of his children is what, like a year old? He was born like last year, I seem to remember.
His son is one and his daughter is three, and both of them in the crowd watching as he got shot.
Terrible thing to happen. I thought we'd talk about this. There has been another significant piece of news today, which is that in the middle of all of this, Peter Mandelson is actually the first major first major person to be fired for Epstein in the current cycle, and we'll talk about that in a bit because that may end up being more significant than it first appears. It could be like, you know, the dominoes are falling for Starmer, so we'll talk about that. But just before we get into some of the parts of this, I'll just go round the panel. Memories of Charlie Kirk. I have to say, I didn't really watch him. In my mind, he was kind of a centre-right, conservative, fairly standard conservative, you know, Trump supporter. That's how I kind of saw him. And so when I saw it was him, I was like, my gosh, is it, you know, and the, I mean, we'll get on to the left's reaction soon, but I'll just go around. Carl, did you know Charlie at all? Or?
You know, Charlie was basically the one American commentator or pundit that I didn't know, actually. I was expecting to meet him in December because I'm thinking about going over to the America Fest. I was anticipating meeting him there. But he knew all of my friends, you know, he knew everyone. Which makes it all the more remarkable I didn't know him, actually. You know, if the years of occupying the same spaces, it just seems I would have done, but just by, you know, trick of the ways, I just never did. I think I've spoken at like three different Turning Point USA events as well. So, you know, they would, you know, happily invite me over to, you know, come and do things with them, which I always accepted. And so it's just kind of crazy how this has happened. So, I mean, of all the people that you think might get assassinated for being confrontational, Charlie was pretty low down on that list. I mean, there are way more hardline people in the MAGA cabinet, let alone other commentators who you think would have something happen to them. Charlie Kirk was pretty, I mean, a lot of people say milquetoast, which is usually used as an insult, but Charlie was a pretty mainstream conservative in every respect. And if he is worthy of being marked for death by whoever did this, then it shows that nobody's off the table, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Dan, any initial thoughts?
I mean, well, on Charlie, I mean, I didn't actually follow him and I didn't watch a lot of his stuff. There are other young commentators that I do find myself turning to. So it's not just the youth thing or anything, but I always knew him to be a completely decent person. He's one of those characters that, because he was a major character, even if you didn't follow him, you'd see clips of him all the time. So very much aware of what he was and, you know, liked the guy, but wasn't close and didn't follow him. And, you know, it's exactly as Carl said, it's shocking that he was the one. I mean, you can think of plenty of other names that at least you would be a lot less surprised that they went after. But they went after the guy who was trying to bridge the gap and making a genuine effort to speak to the left.
So, I mean, his whole thing was debate, right? His whole thing was, we can talk this out. Yeah. Mark, any thoughts? And then what we'll do is, I think we'll go into a little bit of what happened and then some of the theories around it. I think possibly more, I was going to say more interesting, but more pertinent for all of us is where things go, what this means, and, you know, what can possibly happen now, both in America and here. But we'll get on to all of that. Some initial thoughts, Mark.
It's obviously struck me because he was so young. That's like a huge deal to me. It's like someone my own age has just passed on, and in such a horrific manner. He was very, very out and out Christian as well. And as we know in America, where people tend to wear that Christian banner so much more freely and loudly as Americans are wont to do. You know, I think it's difficult to cast aspersions on the shooter for why they've killed him yet. As much as everyone wants to jump on this as deranged leftist a la Trump assassination. So I'm really just waiting to see what information comes out. Although I've seen the bullet stuff. That's Crowder has recently released it, if you've seen that.
I should probably share that. I'll share it on the screen because, I mean, I'll tell you what my initial thought was it as well, is that if this is true, Trump has got a perfect, absolutely perfect pretext to designate Antifa as a terrorist organization. I mean, if Trump was the quote-unquote fascist they say he is, that would be move number one, because I mean they've given him an absolutely perfect opportunity to
I don't want to concede that framing, because like Karl Popper would demand these people be prescribed for this kind of behavior and for the things they're doing, like this,
because they're
this...
enemies of the open society. Karl, is what you mean? Yeah,
exactly. Like, you don't have to be a fascist to think this is completely out of bounds and should be prescribed in every case. Like, you don't have to have any kind of hardline position to think that. That's actually something that a normal centrist liberal would agree with.
I guess my mind went there is because Antifa literally just means anti-fascist. So, you know.
Well, yeah.
We know that fascist just means bad. Right, like that they can't define what fascism is. Most of their membership, you know, it's just the boogeyman. It's the monster under the bed. So, it's the everything bad from the 20th century. You know,
I should probably read what this Crowder tweet actually says. It says, "Exclusive. This morning, my team received an email from an officer at ATF. The email included a screenshot from what appeared to be an internal message describing a weapon and cartridges located by an ATF." And other law enforcement near the scene of the Charlie Kirk shooting at Utah Valley. On September the 10th, 2025, at approximately 12:24 p.m., conservative political influencer Charlie Kirk was shot and killed at Utah Valley University. He was speaking at the university as part of a comeback tour. Multiple LSC 1 and 3 agents responded immediately. The suspect fired one shot from an elevated position on the rooftop in an adjacent building on the campus, and surveillance video shows the suspect jumping off and fleeing the area on foot. ATF and other law enforcement located an older model imported Mauser 0.306 caliber bolt action rifle wrapped in a towel in a wooded area near the campus. The location of the firearm appears to match the suspect's route of travel. The spent cartridge was still chambered, in addition to three unspent rounds at the top fed magazine. All cartridges having graded engraved wording on them expressing transgender and anti-fascist ideology. So, I mean, there it is. If you wanted it, if you ever wanted to have a smoking gun, smoking bit of evidence, caught red-handed, there it is. But I suspect those people who have other theories aren't going to be deterred by this bit of smoking gun evidence. I mean, it strikes me as a little bit unusual to get the cartridges engraved with Antifa and
trans. Say it was Russia or Mossad. I mean, they can still just engrave the bullets.
Oh, hang on. There has been a trend of that recently. Do you remember the school shooting that was the transgender person where they'd copied the Christchurch shooter by painting on the gun and things like this? Like, this does seem to be a bit of a fad at the moment.
My money is on the tranny, but nevertheless, I can see why people won't necessarily be persuaded.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if you just think about it the other way around, though, it'd be like, oh, the person had got their gun engraved with SWAT stickers or something like that. You know, people will say, well, it looks perfect. But what I would say is that regardless of who this person was or whether that is true, you know, let's take it at face value, hasn't really stopped the left from claiming it in general. And I have seen some, and I'm sure you guys have seen some truly disgusting tweets in the past day.
Just a quick thing on that, the engraving. You say, oh, this seems too perfect. Well, remember, a lot of the time these people do this to go viral. So they're presenting the information as clearly and plainly as they can to, frankly, inject their own commentary into the narrative, into the discourse, in this way. This is done on purpose by these people. So
let's not forget as well that the concept of having a gun with trans rights on it doesn't carry the same social, condemnation that, say, having anything associated with the right or the far right in particular would have on it. So much easier to do. And they feel that the culture is with them and they're on the right side of history in their own terms. So it's not unthinkable. And I apply Occam's razor, to be honest. Like, you know, unless you saw something which proved it was it was absolutely fed planted or something like that, or a red herring, there's no reason to think it would be.
Well, what I was going to say, I mean, regardless of whatever the truth is, the left have basically claimed it. I saw this one post by an account called Punished Mother Merrick. I thought it was just disgusting. It said maybe Charlie Kirk shouldn't have spent years being a hateful, demagogic fascist, and this wouldn't have happened. Maybe he should take some personal responsibility. Imagine watching that clip and then writing that. Come on.
Yeah. Can I read you one from our own Ash Sarkar? She had her own variant of that. Quote, I think Charlie Kirk died by the code that he lived by.
This is the thing which comes up again and again and again, which is, it's not our actions which are the consequence. You are facing the consequences of your violent speech or whatever they call it. You remember when they tried to push that whole violent speech angle? So they genuinely believe that the two are equitable. It's like freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom of consequences, even when we shoot you in the face. And that's them.
I was thinking, right, is it worse for them to say that? Or is it worse, right, to say this? And have a guess who said this, right? I'll read it out. My thoughts this evening are with the loved ones of Charlie Kirk. It is heartbreaking that a young family has been robbed of a father and a husband. We must all be free to debate openly and freely without fear. There can be no justification for political violence. That was Keir Starmer who said that. And in a way, that made me more angry than the ones who were just being like the Ashtar cars, who were just so stupid that they're just kind of jumping up and down. Because, I mean, my immediate thought was, hold on a second, open and free debate without fear, literally Keir Starmer. We're the one, like, I mean, the chilling effect that he has had on free speech in this country,
well, like I said,
enabling half the country far right and so on. I mean, isn't Keir Starmer exactly the sort of person who's made this happen?
He literally said, you're going to regret this to the country for protesting. Like, he, like, but this is just where we live, isn't it? What are you going to do?
So, yeah. So there's that. And then there's we probably should go into who some of the other. I mean, there are theories going around. I thought you guys covered it perfectly well on Lotus Eaters, but one theory actually, which hasn't got a lot of play but is being discussed, is that Charlie Kirk, as many American commentators are, where did he stand on the Ukraine issue? Because that is an angle that some people have been, like a kind of hidden angle, that it could be either a Ukrainian angle or a Russian angle to this. Anyone know where? I've seen that just kind of discussed in the background.
I mean, he opposed aid to Ukraine.
Right.
He was on the make peace and come to a settlement with Russia side.
So, because another really horrible group online, okay, so the far left, we would know about, we've just read some of their tweets, we know what they're like, you know, the trans lot, the far left, the Rainbow Coalition, but another really horrible group online are basically what are known as NAFO, or the NAFO bros.
Yeah.
And they've basically been celebrating this too, and saying things like, you know, F around and find out and all this sort of stuff. So that there is a very odd NAFO angle to this, people who are very, very invested in forever war stuff were happy, basically. And then the third angle, go on, Dan, go on.
I was going to say, it'd be interesting to see the Durans take on that, because they normally go straight to that sort of angle.
Yeah, I mean, it's there, it's visible. And then, of course, the other big angle that's done the rounds online, which you guys discussed quite well, I thought. Was that Charlie Kirk over the past, to be honest, I hadn't seen a lot of those clips until you played them, since about January or so, he's basically shifted his position on our favorite people in the Middle East, doesn't he?
I just see it as a stochastic event, largely due to mass radicalization in America in particular, but obviously over here as well. I mean, like, he's the sort of guy that my dad would watch clips of on Instagram and find hilarious because he's dunking on a leftist, but it feels very 2016 because it's like sort of early Crowder, change my mind sort of rhetoric. And then obviously he's gone in an activism route rather than the kind of podcast show route.
Oh, he had a podcast show. He did have that.
He did, but I do feel like, well, in the sense that he was continuing to do that and do the live events and stuff like that, rather than moving purely online. That's what I mean.
So he was starting to ask a lot of questions about Israel, about what happened on 10/7 and things like that. And one of the clips I've seen a lot up and down my timeline is that he said, look, if I turn on them, they're going to take me out. He said that openly, which, and obviously now that he has been in a really massive display, you know, for the whole world to see, has obviously led people to point in that direction.
Clayton Morris did a show earlier where he was saying that he's got mutual friends with Charlie Kirk, and he and Charlie has been telling his friends for some time that he thinks Israel's going to take him out. Now, I don't know if that's true, but Clayton Morris, you know, he was an ex Fox News guy, so he's got at least some credibility.
But unlike the left, who were only happy to claim it, I saw Netanyahu came straight out and said, my wishes are with Charlie Kirk's family. So, you know, there's that. I mean, we have to note that they're not exactly claiming it, are they? So
there was the line at the beginning, he was killed for telling the truth. So Yeah. I'm not saying I believe the conspiracy theory or anything.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think with this, we'll never know. We'll, the thing is, with speculation like this, you'll basically never know.
Did you not see the FBI press conference just before we came on? Because that might be worth talking about.
No, what was that? What was that, Dan?
So the FBI gave a press conference in which they basically said that they found the gun and they've been tracking the movements of the person, and then they'll be going to various shops and homes and businesses and whatever who have CCTV, and that they have
good footage.
Good footage, yeah. Was what they said. Now,
while that hasn't been released.
Yes. So there has been released the footage, has it?
No. Because if you're the suspects at large, why not release the footage so everyone knows what he looks like? So, oh, FBI, I just saw him over here. Why would you not do that?
Yes, so they didn't address that point, and in fact, they didn't actually say a lot. It's one of those FBI press conferences where they talk a lot but don't actually tell you much, other than that they have good imagery of this person. They're not releasing it for whatever reason, but the subtext from what they were saying made it sound as if it was a college student, but they didn't actually say that, so I don't know.
Right, okay.
Like a lot of these things, you have to consider the angle of sort of okay. There's like the quacko wacko theory side of it. The FBI groomed a kid to shoot a conservative influencer, which is not unheard of that they would do something like that. But it seems a bit a little bit out there. And then there's the other side of it, which is that there are people there in power who are looking at how this is inflaming every online space, every piece of discourse. It was very public. It was very sudden, and it's freaking out. And so policy would dictate that they are looking for it within their own means first. And then as soon as they exhaust that, then they can consider releasing it. But what they're concerned about potentially is a whole bunch of retributive violence that then takes place. If it turns out this was the head of a local Antifa mob at some university, suddenly that university is being burned down, like there's unrest everywhere, right? Like, even if that's not necessarily what's going to happen, that's what goes through the minds of the risk assessment people within these organizations.
So, I mean, why don't we get into this now? Because I do think it's possibly the most pertinent question. There's been an awful lot of talk of civil war in the air. I'm pretty on record and pretty strongly come out and said this is just not going to happen. Ed Dutton disagreed. In fact, Ed Dutton has asked to come on, and next Monday we're going to do a special show where we look at this and kind of analyze it in detail. I just don't see that happening here or in America. But it is a narrative. It is a narrative. And I do, despite my opposition to the school of schizo, I actually do believe that there are various clandestine forces stoking division, both in British society and in American society, who want there to be a conflict along, in America, it's along red-blue lines, and in Britain, it's along slightly different lines, but more or less, it's along the lines of the sort of people who are going to be at that Tommy rally in a couple of days, which I still urge people not to go to. I know Carl is going, but I will say again, I still don't think people could go. And in this country, it's more on more sectarian lines. So like the people at the Tommy rally versus kind of like pro-Palestine left Rainbow Coalition type.
Those people are always kept far away from the actual rally. I mean like blocks of away where they can't even see what's going on.
Go on, Carl.
There's always like, they've got these big metal grills that they, you know, the fences. And so they're literally like, you know, 500 feet away, if not more. And there's going to be a huge number of our guys there. And the police, of course. Every time the police have always done a very, very good job of just keeping these things separate. And honestly, I'm not worried about any trouble. I'm just not worried about it.
Uh-huh. But what I should say is that even though I typically have opposed school of schizo, I actually do think that there is sufficient evidence that things are being stoked up in both countries in a very specific way. And what catches my eye, and I'm not saying that this event is necessarily connected to that. But one of the things I specifically read about a week ago is that the whoever it is who is doing this is deliberately trying to stoke up not the traditional quote unquote far right, but the center right. They're deliberately provoking the quote unquote center right. Okay,
face to the they, because when you say this sort of stuff, like,
yes.
I'm not saying that these events aren't happening, but my problem is the kind of animistic. There is a spirit behind and moving
hand. Well, this is the problem, Carl, because it is complex and it's not quite clear. So obviously, and in fact, the factions are pretty similar to the ones we outlined for the suspects, right? So there are, I mean, in our case, we've got Starmer in the British government, and when we come to Mandelson, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that there is a plan, there is an operation underway to remove Starmer, right, which has been in operation for a couple of weeks now, if not the last month or so.
Who's leading that?
But there is also Starmer himself, who, like, let's face it, would you put it past a guy like Starmer to deliberately stoke up and inflame tensions as a pretext to crack down on everyone even harder? Would you put it past him?
Yeah, I think Starmer's afraid of unrest. I think he's afraid of this stuff. I think that he knows he handles it badly. And actually, I think the genies are out of the bottle, frankly. Like, the widespread and organic nature of the flagging campaign, I think, was scary to them, frankly. I think they were is everywhere.
Then there's a second faction, right, which clearly is some intersection of the Trump admin and his friends in a certain country in the Middle East. Right, that's a second faction. A third faction that people generally vaguely point to are the Russians, who are always just mentioned for some reason, and who obviously profit from any chaos that happens in the West. And then, you know, well, you can then start listening. You can say, well, you know, there are forces behind the far left as well, you know, who also like to see chaos in our countries, you know, whoever it is, for example, that is helping to fund and organize the small boat crossings. So that these things are in the background, in my opinion. They're all happening.
I agree with you. These are all things that are happening. And they definitely have some sort of influence. But the thing is, I think that what we're also seeing is the natural consequence of a series of contradictions that have been under great tension within our civilization here and over in America for a long time now. And I think these will begin to naturally resolve without any need for a shadowy figure or, you know, hand behind the scenes. And I mean, do you remember there was a thing about how many times the FBI tried to kill Fidel Castro, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm always reminded of that when it's, that, you know, the shadowy forces of the CIA, sorry, trying to kill Castro. The shadowy forces have got all the money and talent in the world, and yet they can't kill this one twat in Cuba. Like, that seems ridiculous, actually. You know, I'm pretty sure that I'd be able to do it if I was given enough money and time. Like, come on, he's just one fucking socialist. But they couldn't manage it. So I think a lot of it is, I think they do try to do what you suggest, but a lot of it is a real game of chance, right? As in, maybe it'll work, but maybe just it won't happen. Well, do you remember, for example, on January the 6th, do you remember the pipe bombs that were found at the Republican and Democrat headquarters in Washington, D.C.? That's shenanigans, right? That's someone, like you're saying, one of these shadowy forces engaging in shenanigans. But neither of them went off. Nothing happened with them, and they just disappeared. So
January 6th was totally an op, though.
Sure, I'm not saying it wasn't, but like, there were elements of the op that just either didn't go off or weren't employed or whatever. So the circumstances are so incredibly complex, and there are natural forces that are moving in these directions anyway. Like, I don't believe that Israel actually would kill Charlie Kirk for being critical of them. I mean, that just seems too strong, but then maybe I'm wrong. Is it more likely to me that some random troon gets hold of a rifle and then shoots Charlie? Yeah, I think that's more likely, because that's happened plenty of times, right? And, you know, that doesn't require any great amount of infrastructure to bring into existence.
I mean, in the here and now, the tranny thing is looking strong because they're all hooked up on, they're all jacked up on these SSRIs, and there's been a lot of these shootings, and you can just see from,
it's also social media, they're all on the record.
Yeah, and you can also you can see from social media the daily interaction that these people have. They're hyper aggressive, hyper violent. I mean they're more aggressive than men who still think they're men.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That said, so my money is going to be on this being a troon. That said, when you look back historically, the US government does have its fingerprints on a hell of a lot of things. I mean, all the race stuff from the 60s onwards. I remember the great post from you, AA, when you spent years pushing this octopus theory of how it all fits together. And then one day you just had to come out and say, scrap all this. It was just the US government all along.
Well, it was Elon Musk who showed us that. He was literally like, here are all the receipts for USAID. And it's like, oh my gosh, it literally just was the US government.
What's worth remembering is they can't gin something out of whole cloth. Something has to be there for them to amplify.
Yeah, no, you're right, Carl. I should just be clear on what my position is here, okay? I think that whoever these forces are, and you can debate on who they are, they have a vested interest in keeping everybody hyper addicted to a permanent cycle of increasingly escalating outrage. And in fact, the past couple of months have been a very good example. In fact, the past week has been this in hyperdrive. I can't even remember when it happened now. This is how fast news cycles are. In this country, we had the Axe Girl, and then we had the Ukrainian girl on the bus, and then we had the Charlie Kirk in quick succession. Okay, and all of these things, and there are probably other stories that I'm forgetting about in between there. All of these things serve to escalate this sense of outrage, the sense of anger, and the sense that something's got to give. It's all boiling over. Okay, now my view is that part of it is highly successful, but it's not actually going to translate into an actual kinetic situation, because in a strange way, the whole act of posting angrily about it online in most cases stops people doing what has happened to Charlie Kirk here. So in a strange way, the internet then acts as its own kind of containment mechanism, because once you've done 12 angry posts about it, the steam is let off, and then it doesn't actually translate into people organizing in the real world and becoming something like the IRA. That's my view of it. So
when you say that you don't think there's going to be a civil war, I mean, what is it that you actually picture in your head when you say the word civil war? Are you imagining bugles and battle lines, or are you imagining petrol bombs?
I think that in all of these cases, you need people who are organized with specific aims, specific demands, specific needs, specific like funding, weaponry, and so on. I just don't see where that's coming from. And I've read over Betsy's arguments, and I've read over, I've watched his podcast and things, and he kind of vaguely points towards the troubles. But like, I don't really see what's happening in this country, or indeed what's happening in America, as manifesting along those lines. What I see is highly symbolic events that gets everybody angry like this, and events where it occasionally does spill over, like this tragic event that's happened to Charlie Kirk. What I don't see is how that online anger, that online rage, then translates into real world action, real world organization, real world groups, etc., which would then turn into a situation like any other civil conflict we've seen anywhere around the world.
A very interesting conversation with Martin McGuinness on Newsnight years and years ago, and of course Martin McGuinness would know all about terrorism and the IRA, and this discussion was along the lines of why did it fizzle out, and he kind of basically said, well, people got money, and then they decided to spend their weekend watching a video rental and washing their new car. Right.
Yeah, so bread and circuses. And as far as I see, like now, I mean, I've said so many times, whatever happens at this Tommy rally, the ultimate effect will be we're going into autumn, the weather's going to turn, it's already started raining, football's back on, Netflix back on, kids back at school, takeaways, and bread. And I mean, if you measure bread and circuses, and if you, in fact, there are some people like the in Prophets of Doom, I talk about that guy, Joseph Tainter and Peter Turchin, they actually have a bread and circuses index, right? So historical bread and circuses, and they can actually pinpoint the exact time where the bread and circuses equilibrium broke for the Roman Empire, for example, or you know, for the Ottomans, or any other empire you can think of. And the fact is, our society and American society is just nowhere near being on that bread and circuses scale to actually spill over into getting to the point where people are just going to get off their asses and overthrow the government, or, you know, bother to you know, get into camps and fight each other as people have done in historically. It's just, we're just not anywhere close to being there. And as far as I can see, Betts just doesn't answer that.
I have this issue with what you're saying, is because, yes, there isn't going to be a sort of Roundhead and Cavalier style civil war, but I don't think anyone's really proposing that that's what's going to happen. I mean, for example, apparently today, Sarah Hodgson, the MP for Washington and Gateshead South, had someone try to firebomb her offices in her constituency. It's stuff like that, like the shooting of Charlie Kirk, the murder of that Minnesotan Democrat senator last month, like events like this. That's what he means when he says civil war, right? And the problem, I think, is actually that there are no organized sides that are prepared to fight each other, because that means the issue can't actually ever be resolved. If the issue could be resolved in actual actions, like an actual, you know, set to combat, then at least it would be over. But what I think we're going to be experiencing is a kind of low level, just sadistic violence that happens periodically, unpredictably, and continues to just stoke the fire under the...
Carl, I mean, what do you really see happening after this now? Is this Charlie Kirk event going to get people all over America organizing in platoons or whatever? Or is it actually going to result in, okay, and no offense to anyone, 100 Tim Pool podcasts saying there's going to be a civil war? Because if the result is the 100 podcasts saying there's going to be a civil war, there's not going to be a civil war.
I am not saying that it will ever come to Roundheads and Cavaliers lined up with their pikes, right? I don't think that's going to happen, because I think that actually one of the problems that we have with technological development is we don't know what comes next. As in, there are actually, I said this to you on Twitter the other day, we're still in history, and there are events in history that are unprecedented. And frankly, the internet is one of those things. Like, we can't look back to any other period in history and say, okay, what effect does the internet have on widespread civil conflict? Because there just isn't one. And so we're going to learn firsthand what happens when you introduce the internet into widespread discontent. And I don't think it's going to end up with two sides roundheading and cavaliering it around. I think it's more likely that we're seeing essentially what's happening now, which is just random death.
There's a deep problem with the internet, though. It's created a almost like metaphysical problem for us, right? Which is that, how can any event break through hyper reality to become a real event? Okay. Now obviously, this has actually happened to Charlie Kirk, and he's actually got a family and so on. Donald Trump was shot, right? Donald Trump was assassinated.
What does?
Now, the problem I see, Carl, right, even in this past week, is the news cycle is so relentless, and the algorithm is so relentless, that how does any event kind of gain enough permanence to actually register as a real event, or in a month's time, or 2 months' time, or 3 months' time, when there's been another 16 news cycles in the never-ending torrent? Does it ever actually end up becoming something real? Do you understand what I mean?
I can answer your question of what I think a civil sort of conflict might look like. And what it would look like is basically just what's already happening now to us happening to the other side as well. So in France, churches are being burnt down a couple of weeks. In this country, there's sort of violent assaults on the white populace on a regular sort of basis. In America, there's these sort of random murders happening all the time and shootings. All it would take is for people on the other side of that violence to start doing it back at the same rate. Can you imagine if, you know, if random blacks in America were murdered just on the street, and there were, and random left wingers influencers were shot, and mosques were burnt down 2 a week in France, and, you know, the equivalent of that, all it takes is for the other side to respond in kind to the level of violence that we're already at, and you're in something like a Northern Ireland style civil war. And what would it take to get to that point is that sooner or later somebody's going to do it. I mean, very rarely this sort of thing already does happen. There was that guy who drove his white van into, was it Finsbury Mosque, years and years ago, and it got no traction because everybody was like, yeah, that's bad, don't drive your van into something. But what happens when, what happens when you get the news cycle that we've got, and let's say a left-wing influencer was shot next week?
Yeah, if someone shoots Hassan Piker.
Yeah, and the reaction is, don't give a shit. Yeah. They deserved it because
literally posted Hassan's tweets about Charlie Kirk.
Yes,
that's what people
And what happens if two mosques in France burn down next week? Are the French going to be like, oh no, now the mosques are burning down as well as the churches, or are they going to be good? That's how you.
I hate to say this, but I just see the odds of that actually happening are low, because just people end up just not doing it because they're making podcasts about how there's going to be a civil war and not organizing. And the left tend to be the only ones who really do anything.
Yeah, but the left have got their own cycle of podcasts as well, right? What it is some guy who's listened to these relelessly, who's just like, okay, now I've decided I've had enough. And then you get the kind of Christchurch shooting effect.
We've actually had these stories though. Mm. And what happens is the media put a very different frame on it and just say like, this is mental illness. And then it's just, and then like it just doesn't manifest in, they manage it away. So it never actually ends up in the scenario that Dan is talking about.
No, but the scenario I'm talking about is just retributive strikes on either community. And I think we're in that. I think we are seeing that now. Like, we are seeing the odd insane Republican kill the odd Democrat senator, or like the Joe Cox over here. And then you are seeing some random troon either shoot up a school or shoot Charlie Kirk or whatever. We're seeing it. Like, this is probably what it's going to be like for a long time. Like, this is the same sort of like Italy's years of lead in like the 70s or whatever it was, where it's just random tit for tat killings on political and ideological.
Are these organized or just kind of random nutters? Yeah. Just kind of people who are mentally ill, basically.
Well, I mean, look at the people. They're random nutters who are just very plugged into the political conversation. They've decided they've had enough for whatever reason that day. And then they do something terrible.
So in the history books, will there be a chapter on the random nutter civil war where you have two sets of people who have lots of podcasts and then occasionally mentally ill people killing each other? So, like,
I mean, it seems to be
Or is this like an unprecedented thing that's never happened before?
I don't know. But I mean, this seems to be what we're seeing, right? I mean, do you object to my characterization of it?
No, I would agree. That there are random nutters who do these sorts of things, but where I may kind of shed doubt is whether that kind of, you can beg that up into being an actual civil war or
that's
anything other than random events with narratives put around.
Nobody thinks it's going to result in a roundhead and cavalier civil war, right? We can put that to bed. There is not going to be lines of troops fighting over whatever the woke stuff is and whatever the conservative stuff is. That's not going to be the case. What's so we can start.
Right? So there is still one absolute organized minority, isn't there? And they're the government of America and the government of Britain are an absolute organized minority with a monopoly on violence. So as long as they're dealing with two basically disorganized groups, they're going to win 10 times out of 10, as per...
aside from anything else, the period that we're in, once we win, which I believe we'll, this will be a period of unrest, right? You might see, like, there's a period of unrest before X politician or so-and-so party gets into power and starts putting things right. And you're absolutely right that the deep state and the sort of the powers that be, so to speak, are an organized minority. But you've seen how their mishandling of everything is absolutely destroying the economy. It's absolutely destroying cost of living. It's absolutely destroying our potential for comeback as well, you know, in destroying the selling off the entire manufacturing base and everything like that, right? So what ends up happening is you see the weight of that system unable to sustain itself, completely clogged with its own bureaucratic processes. It'll lash out as it defends itself, as it collapses down around itself. But it's completely unsustainable. Like, we've seen how much debt we're in. We see the IMF stepping in. We know we've got like 10, 20 years left max. And that's what we're sort of hedging our bets on. Is that's the whole point of building, quote unquote, parallel institutions, as much as that's a tired line.
I mean,
is to hedge against that, basically.
If you have a look at this quotation, though, Mark, from Professor David Betts himself, the expert on all of these things, so I'm told, he says, paradoxically, so he talks about how cyberspace can be a powerful force, the internet is powerful. But paradoxically, he says, it seems to it enervate these movements. Enervate just means drain of energy, to impair their ability to escalate and to build disciplined cadres over time, which heretofore has been a hallmark of revolutionary success. Contemporary events in the Middle East, where all regimes toppled by spontaneous outpourings of public rage, are being succeeded by more disciplined revolutionaries playing the vanguard game, illustrate this duality. So even David Betts knows that the internet doesn't really get people over.
I'm also not trying to claim that we're trying to build a revolutionary movement in that sense, because we're not. But the things that we can only point to are the achievements that we ourselves have put down. And yes, sometimes that's wasted energy, but a lot of the time it's well-meaning, well-feeling people trying to build stuff. I know so many people who I've met at the conferences that we put on, that Shieldings have put on, and further afield as well, that are trying to build their own businesses, to become wealthy, to become peoples of influence in order to influence things in their own spaces and their own towns and, you know, in actual geographical locations. It's not the same as building a militarized force and going in and taking over your local council offices. It's about it's playing the game in a different way.
Right. So none of that is happening, and yet we're getting escalating civil conflict.
Yes.
Is that what you guys are saying? Okay. All right.
Can I throw in a couple of civil conflict? Is a symptom of the environment that we're in, where we have heavily polarized rhetoric on both sides, which is causing stochastic events to take place. And that's what that phrase describes.
I mean, to me, all of this, I hate to say, all of this to me just seems hyper real, narrative driven, and kind of increasingly fantastical, which is not to take away from the seriousness of the actual events that are happening. I'm just talking about how they're transmuted by online discourse.
You are right that this is hyper real, right? So basically, think about, like, you're on the train and some guy's just scrolling his phone, you're scrolling your phone, and you're just looking at, you know, whatever normie football or whatever. He's going, and this is something the left are always complaining about, he's going through like far right propaganda. And then he goes and gets a gun and shoots some black guy just because he's black or something, right? Like that is...
Which never happens. Never happens.
Yeah, but let's say it does. Let's say it's...
Let's pretend something that hasn't happened happens.
Okay, well, let's take the Christchurch shoot, right? For these Muslims,
let's go with that.
Okay. The day, right? This is just a normal day, but some guy comes in, loaded up on a bunch of ideology from the internet. He's got his guns together. He's painted on them, whatever, in Tippex. And he just starts gunning everyone down. Like, they've got no frame of reference what the hell's happening. Like, this is just like, what the fuck is going on? You know, if an invading army had landed on the, you know, shores of New Zealand, at least they'd be prepared. They'd be like, have some sort of narrative in which to contextualize and make intelligible what's happening with this guy. That's the problem with hyperreality. It becomes unintelligible to the people who are on the receiving end of it. Like the Ukrainian guy was stabbed, right?
So given
he had something going on in his head that she had absolutely no access to.
So given what you've just said, though, Carl, given what you just said, okay, you all accept that hyperreality is a thing and it can lead to theoretically or actually events like this. Really, should people be feeding into that hyperreality, that energy, that anger, you know, this notion that it's coming, that it's boiling over, or should we actually be stepping back from this? Because if somebody was trying to play you, it's a pretty ripe ground to play, isn't it? It's a pretty ripe ground.
It's outside of your control.
It's outside of your control. What is in your control is whether you feed into it or not feed into it.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's not going to affect you, right? That doesn't mean that you're...
Well, of course, it's not in our control, right?
Yeah, but even whether you can control it or not doesn't mean that you can just get off your job at the peace parlor and then go sit on a train with a black guy sat behind you and hope nothing happens, right? You can't. It still affects the real world, even if you're not directly contributing to it, or even if you're not engaged in it, or even if you're avoiding it, right? And this is the thing. This is the face of civil conflict in the era of the internet, when people have access to specifically tailored information feeds that. You are entirely governed by the information you take in. And if the information you take in is completely different to the people around you, this is pretty unprecedented. Normally, everyone had access to the same information in that particular area because it was either coming from the TV or there's a town crier or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to imagine what that's going to be like in the future. But I think it's just going to be random people doing crazy stuff, frankly.
Right, yeah. No, you're probably right that it's not the last of it kind of event like this or Christchurch or any other kind of
not going to be
yeah
and that's the question right. What happens when this keeps ramping up, because we've not been in this kind of situation before. So I mean, like, where would you even go? Like, what would you even do if you're like, right, I'm going to fight a civil war against the left? Okay, where, what are you going to do? You know, it could be someone who's like working in Starbucks or something, but then they could all be right wingers. Right. Who knows? Like, you don't know, right?
So ultimately, you do agree with me that all of these narratives are kind of it's fantasy, basically, because when people are talking along these lines, they're not talking about random shooters and things like that. When people say civil war, they think of civil war, right? So in order for the narrative to make sense, you have to literally redefine civil war as nutters doing random acts of violence.
Okay. Right.
Yes.
First things first, these are not actually random. There is a causal link, causal chain that leads up to these things. It's just that we're not privy to this up until that point. Like the Christchurch shooter, but there was a causal chain that he wrote in his manifesto that explained it. But if you're not privy to it, then it just does look like a random act of savagery, right? So first, they're not actually random. We just describe them as random because we don't know why they happened until we've got long after the fact, and we can't predict them in advance. But I've said from the start that it's not going to look like a traditional civil war. And people are actually using civil war as a bit of a misnomer, because what they recognize is there is widespread discontent and polarization along various different kinds of political lines, in fact, and that these groups have become increasingly intolerant of one another. They don't see the enemy or the opponent's claim as legitimate at base, and themselves, the people making them, are
it's still only nutters. See, I want to push back a little bit though, because as far as I know, like let's say that in any society there is a nutter constant. I.e., in any given population of X amount of million, there are going to be so many thousand nutters.
Yeah.
Those nutters are going to find a pretext, whether it is radical Islam or far right or far left or Antifa. If they're a nutter, they're going to find a cause, attach themselves to it, and then do acts of nuttery in the name of that cause. That's just the nature of nuttery. So it is still basically random as to how those people are distributed, because they're going to find that cause.
No, and they're still going to do act of nuttery. I think the number of nutters in a society is actually indicative of the overall health of that society. So we used to have far fewer nutters in this country. America used to have far fewer nutters.
Did it? Yeah, absolutely.
Shootings didn't used to be a thing in America. Like, this isn't relatively new. They've had guns the whole time, but school shooting. Yeah, but that's the point.
Yeah, okay.
You can name the moment in which school shootings became like a regular feature of American life, and now they have hundreds every year. Like, it's really mad how this is ramped up, and yet they've had guns the whole time, right? So the nutter quotient, I think, is increasing with what I think we can just call the breakdown of society, because like the random attacks, like the school shootings, like the shootings in malls and stuff like that, like. To go and shoot anonymous people, people you don't know, is kind of indicative of a society that in which people just don't belong. Like, because otherwise you would feel something for the people you're shooting. Instead, you want to take revenge on society writ large. So I think this is the sort of general atomization of society producing more nutters, frankly. But
I want to jump on the back of that as well and talk about why that's a massive barrier to organization and the sense of sort of camaraderie and community and everything like that. We're fortunate in that we've built communities around ourselves and we have networks of people that are around. But one of the reasons why, you know, like events that would previously have been globally or nationally enraging aren't anymore is because everyone sat around, or many people are sat around and going, well, it's not my community. I'm just an individual. I'm just the endpoint of liberalism, right? I'm a human being, and I feel bad for both sides sort of just sitting there. Like, what could cause someone to be so angry they'd kill a man? And also, isn't it sad for that man and his family? But the bonds of the greater community and the kind of consciousness of a group is something which has been denied us now for years, which is why it's interesting with this, like, raise the colors operation, where you go, that's indicative of a kind of ethnic solidarity that we haven't seen in this country, for instance, in decades. Like, it's just not been a thing since, I'd say the closest we got was like 2012 Olympics, where everyone was suddenly like caught up in the energy of us. So the concept of the wider us and the idea of an attack on someone in your group being an attack on us is something which doesn't really exist.
Sorry, again.
No, go on.
Be the voice of cold realism of all times. 2012 Olympics, the energy of that was also Mo Farah, wasn't it? It was the Mo bot covered, drenched in the Union Jack.
The
energy of 2012 Olympics wasn't ethnically charged. It was with the Union Flag.
That's what Mark's saying. You're trying to describe the character of it as not the character that you think is acceptable, but Mark's describing the perception of it, which is the grand we. And he is right. I remember it very clearly.
I think the grand we of 2012 Olympics included Mo Farah. And frankly, I think the spirit of Operation Raise the Colours includes Mo Farah as well, to be honest, from what I've seen of the clips of the demonstration.
The character of it doesn't really matter. That what matters is, does it act as a binding agent to the people involved? And it did.
Can I chip my bit in now? Can I throw something
in? Go on, Dan.
So, coming back to my point about, you know, all it takes is a reciprocation of violence. I looked up how many asylum centres in Ireland got burnt down. It's 31.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that has already happened. Is it wild to imagine that 31 mosques or asylum centres in the UK could burn down? And then that triggers a reaction from the Mohammedans, and that then gets another reaction. And it's very possible that two things happen at once. You know, the point that Mark was making about the economy, yes, what happens if, you know, I don't think we're going to quite go to the IMF, but we could have a major financial crisis. What if there is a major financial crisis? Inflation is running at 20 to 30%, and that's not difficult to imagine because we already had 2 years recently where inflation was running at 20%. What if it's running at 20 to 30% for several years? Half the civil service gets booted. The benefits get turned off. You've got to, and frankly, if anyone's going to riot, it's going to be the proles. And then at that moment, there's a school massacre. You know, a Southport-style school massacre. And that's not so difficult to imagine because these happen regularly in Africa and they've happened a number of times in the past in South America. So what if the bread of the bread and circuses gets turned off and the circus bits become basically just sporadic ethnic conflict? It's not that difficult to imagine that we could get to a situation which Ireland is at least already halfway towards.
Yeah, I mean, take away the bread and the circuses, then anything is possible. But it's a pretty big if. Although I will say the British economy is not in great shape at the moment. We should probably get on with the second part of this, which is Mandelson and the Starmer government, because I happen to believe that there are plans afoot. Basically, there are, again, clandestine forces. You can think about who they may be, who want to just bring down the Starmer government. And it could be, Dan, because they have foreseen, right, what any one of the situations that you have described, and they want to get a lid on it. And they think maybe one of the ways of getting a lid on it would be a Prime Minister Farage or something like that to get reforming. Mandelson, who was the ambassador to America, remember, admire so much. I've still got the clip here somewhere. It takes on a pretty different complexion now. Even more kind of creepy.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
Do you know of him with Epstein?
I don't, but I do have the birthday book messages, which you can have a look up on the screen here.
That's the image I'm referring to.
Yeah, so there's him and Epstein. He says, but wherever he is in the world, he remains my best pal. And it gets even worse. It's like once upon a time, an intelligent, sharp-witted man they call mysterious parachuted into my life. I was waiting for him to turn up. Picture of Mandelson, you know, topless there.
Are these messages from Mandelson to Epstein or the other way around?
These are messages from Mandelson to Epstein, or written in his, you know, letters that he sent. And often, no sooner were you getting used to having him around, you would suddenly be alone again. Leaving you with some quote unquote interesting friends. I mean, this is pretty like he wasn't just mates with Epstein. These are ridiculous. And they go on and on and on. I mean, he wrote to him a lot, his best pal. So it got to the point where Keir Starmer basically had no choice but to fire him. He initially wanted to stand by him. The statement that he made, I'll just read here. In light of the additional information in emails written by Peter Mandelson, the Prime Minister has asked the Foreign Secretary to withdraw him as ambassador. The emails show the depth and the extent of Peter Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein is materially different from that known at the time of his appointment, suggesting that they knew that he was mates with him, just not quite that good mates with him. Mandelson is gone. And what is it, less than a week after Angela Rayner is gone? And a lot of people are saying
that's the only scandal potentially, AA, because, of course, remember, we got the trial of the three male models coming in about 200 days. That was pushed back for quite some way. And I did wonder why these male models were being pushed back that far. Is it because the Prime Minister cannot be the Prime Minister after they take the stand? Because, of course, you have to remember that they're sort of 19, 20 now, and they were targeting flats that the Prime Minister was living in 4 years ago.
So, well, I mean, the obvious question is, how much did Starmer know before? Another really dodgy thing is that the government, Starmer's government, has blocked a request that Mandelson sent to Tony Blair when Tony Blair was the prime minister, requesting like some audience with Epstein or something like that, or some open communication with Epstein. This was like after people knew what Epstein was about, by the way. Now that communication has been blocked, but you know, there's a little line into tone, which means they're getting pretty close to the heart of the octopus here. A lot of people have noticed that whenever any Epstein stuff falls, there's always somebody in Britain, Prince Andrew, and now Mandelson. So the scalps that we're getting tend to be British figures. But people are saying that, like, how much longer can this government cling on? What I don't understand is, I mean, if Starmer decides to dig in, and if Labour decide they're not going to go, as far as I can tell, like, you can put as much pressure on them as possible, but they just don't have to call an election, right? You can just stay indefinitely if he decides just to be stubborn about it.
There needs to be a vote of no confidence, and it needs to be done in a specific form of wording. Technically, any MP can trigger it, but most likely it's not going to get any time unless it's the leader of the opposition that triggers it. Then you need Labour MPs to vote for it. So it would have to be one of those things, again, where two things happen at once. If Labour put forward a budget where they dramatically cut benefits or something and the state payroll, and then the leader of the opposition puts in a vote of no confidence, they might get it through. But other than that, technically the king has the power, but he's not going to use it. So no, it is at the will of the prime minister as to how long he stays.
Interesting. But I just have a feeling, I mean, you guys may disagree, that somebody has got it in for this Starmer government. You know, it could just be the old-fashioned Tory press, of course. Could be this, but I feel like they're trying to bring down this Starmer government now. We can't wait until 2029. And I think Farage has even come out and said that after this IMF report at the end of this month, Starmer's probably done, and there's probably going to be an election sooner rather than later. So even
JD Vance and Elon have not been shy about bringing down the British government.
Yeah, I mean, J.D. Vance has said it, Elon Musk has said it, so clearly there's quite a lot of vested interest in to bring this government down. Do we think Starmer survives, or do you think, like, losing Mandelson now, this shows, like, he basically had a reshuffle force on him, and then once that's out of the way, now there's a new fresh crisis.
My odds are 70-30 in favour of him going before the trial of the rent boys, male models.
Okay, and that's in 200 days, Dan, you say?
Yes.
Any thoughts, Carl? Do you think Starmer can cling on, or do you think he's going to go?
I mean, who knows? Like, things... He's in a position where it's just unwinnable. Like, everyone hates him. There's very little he can actually do because he's committed to the system that's destroying us. So Starmer's not going to do any of the radical things that would need to be done in order to actually resolve any of the problems. So, I mean, who knows? He's obviously a dead man walking, but how long is he going to walk for?
Well, watching Steve Bannon's interview with Steve Edgington, I don't know how close Bannon is to Trump these days, but Bannon really made it seem like there's definitely some sort of plan to get rid of Starmer and get Nigel in. It's very difficult to watch that interview and not think that there are certain forces, MAGA forces, you could say, in Washington that wants Starmer gone and Nigel in. Mark, any thoughts? Yeah, go on. Carl?
There might be, but Starmer's fucking it all up on his own. Like, you know, Starmer didn't have to make any of the decisions that he's made, and yet he's made them anyway. Like, you know, when do you remember the autumn budget? They're like, yeah, we've got 22 billion black holes, so now we're going to put 22 billion into carbon capture. It's like, what are you doing? That's ridiculous. Yeah. It's just a slap in the face. Everyone can see it. And so be like, ooh, MAGA is going to get rid of Starmer. I don't know, man. I think Starmer's doing just fine on his own. You know,
you have to.
No, I agree that he's done a terrible job. Mark?
Yeah, you have to think about what the interests are, where the interests are aligned within the state itself. And I don't just mean the Labour Party, but the idea that MAGA attacking the Labour government, even if the Labour government isn't doing exactly what the entrenched civil service wants, they're all very anti-Trump anyway. And so there's going to be heavy resistance to any kind of American influence, especially when it's fronted by Trump and Vance, that's going on there. Because really, if they want a prime minister ousted, it's going to come from within the state. You know, they're going to cut him out of meetings, Starmer out of meetings. They're going to deny him information or get it to him late, stuff like that. All sorts of different little tactics in order to delay and frustrate his government to the point where it collapses, essentially, because it's not functioning properly, because he's not able to turn the cogs. Whereas, if this was coming from, say, Kamala Harris government or something like that, where they weren't happy, you know, I think you'd see there's more potential of that happening, I think, than MAGA directly influencing the fall of a prime minister in Britain.
Yeah, I don't, by all accounts, Trump and Starmer get on well personally. But Steve Bannon said that. I have to ask you, Carl, last thing on Starmer and for Mandelson, do we think that he gets any actual accountability or comeuppance, or is he going to be arrested or investigated, or is he going to be in 6 months' time put into another cushy job? Because that's what Mandelson's done his whole career, by the way.
Well, he's a lord, isn't he?
Any comeuppance for Mandelson at all? No.
Lord Mandelson, no. Nothing's
going to happen. No, different rules for them. Okay, last thing I want to ask Carl very quickly is that, okay, I mean, I've said to you the best case scenario for this Tommy rally in a couple of days is that, you know, everybody gets up for it. Jeff Taylor makes a video saying the revolution has come, yay. And then the energy dissipates and everybody goes back to watching football. You know, another successful rally, job done type thing. To me, that's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario, basically, is that Starmer tries something on. Starmer is so, like, Starmer in one of his kind of spurgier, has another spurg out like he did last year, tries some sort of event, tries to kick something off, and you get scenes where the police come in and he uses it as a pretext for a crackdown, blah, blah, blah. Do you actually think Starmer would survive an attempt of doing something like that? At sort of large event.
When you say when Starmer did something last year, what did he do last year?
Starmer came out, called half the country far right, and arrested a pile of people for kicking over bins.
Yeah, but he was responding. He was responding to the perceived actions of the far right, not even incorrectly, I think. But and I think that he got burned by that. I think that Starmer really felt that. I mean, that's when his polling died, basically. And you were the ones who were—he's not coming back from this. He's not coming.
I agree. Yeah,
and but you were completely correct. Like his polling is probably the worst polling of all time. And I'm not even doing a Trump on that. Like, has there ever been a prime minister the first year into his tenure he's on 11% approval rating? It's just, like, has there ever been that? You know, it's just staggering. And so I think you called that correctly. But that wasn't Starmer doing something. That was Starmer responding to something poorly.
No, I think he did. I think that Starmer deliberately begged that up into something more than it was in order to make a big display of locking loads of people up. That's what I think he did.
Yeah, I don't think it was deliberate. I think he genuinely is a true believer in the rules-based international order. And he saw a cathartic exercise of aggression on the streets. And in his mind, that is the line that is unacceptable. And so he felt completely justified from the sort of perspective of, you know, legalistic liberal theory. Say, no, that's 100% wrong. There's no justification for this. And therefore, but that just wasn't the mood of the country, because this is why the theory is so disconnected from the actual lived reality of being a human being, right? Actually, when a foreigner starts murdering a bunch of children, rigid law-like adherence to the rules is actually not that appropriate. It actually fails to understand what the nature of the thing is.
That's why you saw the floundering afterwards, where he makes the Island of Strangers speech, because his approval rating craters and someone tries to fix it for him, because he claimed afterwards that he hadn't seen the speech in advance and then tried to walk it back and then was like, but actually the sentiment's actually... It's that kind of floundering where he doesn't really know what to do because he's been confronted with the fact that actually most people don't think like it.
You rule out the possibility of Starmer deliberately like causing a ruck or something.
I don't think Starmer wants unrest. I think that for him, unrest is an unmitigated bad. And he will just come up with any justification. Say it's the Russians, he'll say it's, you know, the far right or whatever, to do whatever he wants. He doesn't need an event to happen. Say, you know, the small boats. Oh, we're going to have digital ID because of the small boats. How's that going to stop it? It's not at all. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter because it's just what he wants to do, right? So I think that people are definitely thinking about this in the wrong way. But what I think for Starmer is the best case scenario is that nothing happens at this weekend, right? Because we get to play to the closed audiences of our own followers and say, you know, or whatever, Starmer's, you know, libtard government, whatever it is. But that's just a day ending in Y. Nothing new happens. If somehow, like, so, there are various things that could happen. But, like, if, say, the police start cracking skulls, you're going to find that a lot of the people who go to it are just normal. They're just completely normal. It's going to be grannies and families with their kids, just like the last one, the Trafalgar. It was just normal. And that's what was great when Michelle Dewberry went down, and she was like, this is just really nice. What are you talking about? This isn't a bunch of far-right thugs. This is just normal working families who are just out to show pride in our country. And suddenly we had, you know, we got a huge amount of sympathy from GB News and their presenters, which is important to continue to building the constituency of we are the normals, everyone else is the freaks. And so for us, best case scenario is nothing bad happens. For Starmer, best case scenario is that just nothing happens at all, because the best that he can expect is nothing, and the worst is unbelievably bad optics that might actually get people again Southport style out in the streets rioting. Like who knows how bad it could get?
And I'll just add to that I think when it came to Southport, it was the first major crisis of Labour's government, and Starmer wanted to appear as I'm the hard man, I'm coming down right now. That will deter any further acts in over the course of my tenure, because they know that I come down hard on disobedience, essentially, and that's why he came down so hard.
Well, I will remain a skeptic to the last, but hopefully, Carl, nothing happens. So my hope.
I mean, I'm personally going to be calling for peace and unity and friendship. So, you know, they won't be able to accuse us of stoking anything up. But I really think it's in Starmer's best interest that just nothing happens. That's the best he can hope for.
All right. So just before we get out of here, there have been some. I'm going to have to go and pick up AAA in about 10. We can't go too much longer. Coney has come in with a bunch of super chats saying some points. One, as you've stated, there won't be a civil war in Britain or America. Two, there's no point to liberalism and pluralism if a golden retriever, let's just talk things out, Republican, gets shot in broad daylight. Three, the rewards of tolerance and treachery and betrayal. Four, the left engages in superficial weaponization of empathy to justify destroying things for vanity, resentment, material gain, and cruelty. Five, the word fascist is the left code for it's okay to kill this person. When they call you a fascist, they think you should die. Six, they knew Peter Mandelson was a friend of Jeffrey Epstein before they appointed him as ambassador. So there were 6 points. I don't know if there was if they were building to an argument. I think there were 6 disconnected points, but okay. Well, thanks for that, Coney. Pood says, the footage came up on my girlfriend's social media without her knowing. She was not okay after. This kind of violence is frying people's brains. I mean, I genuinely do worry about this past week has been particularly bad, but I do worry. I thought, you know, there was the Ukrainian girl on the bus. Where that day, that I probably saw that go past my doom scroll probably about 1,000 times. So, I mean, some people just posting it over and over again. It can't be healthy, can it, to be exposed to this day in, day out?
Same with Charlie Kirk's neck exploding. Just my feed was, and I was just like, Jesus Christ.
It's not nice. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what can be done about that, because Starmer, of course, will say, well, this is all the more reason to send some social media, etc. I don't know what the actual answer to it is, but it can't be healthy. Chris Primer says, feels like it glows. He also says, what brand is Carl's mic? I love it. Do you know what your mic is, Carl?
The microphone?
Sure.
Sure. I don't know what. SM7. Sure.
It'll be a SMB77, probably.
Yeah, that's
Yes, the eunuch says, in regards to the talk about it being professional shot, that is bollocks, says Yiz. A 150-meter shot on a stationary man-sized target is a normal shot. Anyone in my family could make the shot. I mean, to be honest, I know nothing about guns, but when everybody said it, do you remember it was that boomer was arrested at this, like, when I woke up this morning, everybody had this picture of a boomer that had been arrested. I did think, like, could he make the shot? But apparently...
He would have been basically point blank.
Right, okay.
He wasn't on top of the roof, so...
But apparently, a 150-meter shot is not that difficult to make, even if you can... No, I
think they're correct. I don't think it is.
Ozzy the Beer Thief says, do you think these posts celebrating Kirk's death might be botted? Perhaps clandestine forces are trying to breathe life back into the culture wars. I will say that 180,000 likes is quite a lot of likes on any tweet in the current... I mean, even Elon Musk doesn't get that many sometimes. I've seen some with even bigger likes. Like, I've seen one doing the rounds with something like 400,000 likes. So they do seem quite high. Then again...
Okay, a depth of feeling in the left, right?
Yeah, I mean, if they're real, it's pretty disturbing. To be honest, even 10 likes would be disturbing on some of those tweets. Speaking of the Ukrainian thing, because I haven't had a chance to speak about that yet either, I did see a clip during the round from a black YouTuber. I forget his name now. Actually, quite a big channel, like a 500,000 plus channel, basically just come out and saying, "Yeah, we don't care about this. We just don't ask us to care. We don't care. We don't give a shit." I couldn't believe that one, and I can't believe it's still up on YouTube. Can you imagine if that was it?
Loads of TikToks like that as well.
Oh, crazy. Just it really is. They've got themselves into a really dark place, I think. As the eunuch says, I think it's clear who's behind this. Our best and most loyal ally, of course. Kirk's recent talks were about the you-know-whos rejecting Zionism. They were stopping the next populist president because Kirk had it in him to be a real president.
I'm not sure I see Kirk as president, actually, but I don't know. I don't see any particular reason to think that it's Israel.
Sergeant Hoddle says, I fear leftoids using violence as an effective strat because the right are afraid of their own shadow and won't use power. It will leave a chilling effect and won't cause a chimp out because leftoids control the MSM, making it a low-cost tool. On the point of Trump designating Antifa a terrorist organization, any chance of that happening? Because, I mean, if this is not terrorism, I don't know what is.
He should.
There is a question as to the wisdom of that, because, of course, Starmer just did the same thing with Palestinian Action, and that now means he needs to go around arresting, you know, 50, 60-year-old people with signs sat in Parliament Square. So,
Antifa's just a completely different crowd, though. The question is whether or not they class it as an organization or an association, right? So if it's an association, there's not much they can do. Oh, this man was associated with Antifa, and then it's very easy. Like, one of the big things with Antifa is a bit like Anonymous, you know, the hacker known as Anonymous.
Because in the Palestine Action case, you don't have to be a card-carrying quote-unquote member. You just have to sign up, and they'll arrest you for it.
But there's no representative.
Cheers, Carl. Okay, we'll carry on. I should say that I saw a guy wearing an Antifa t-shirt in a canteen. I was at RHS Wisley a couple of weeks back with AAA, and I saw a guy in an Antifa t-shirt, and I feel like he sensed my presence. I was sending him mind signals, and I think he could feel it. Shell Beach says, censorship is the Achilles heel of liberalism. The ideology cannot function without it. Demanding the complete and total end of all censorship needs to be our response to this. Broman Hanks says, please be careful at the rally, Carl. AA, I know you're a recluse, but still, everybody stay safe. Rest in peace, Charlie. Yeah, and if Carl can still hear us, I do hope. Are you going, Dan? You're not going to go on the 13th.
No, I did go to one accidentally because I was in London for the Ed Dutton thing anyway, and it was happening the next day, and Carl was going, so I thought I'd go along. But you know, I'm not against the man. I'm just not. It's not really my thing.
Okay. Shia says, good stream, chaps. You're going, Mark.
Yeah, but I'm going to go report on it. That's different.
Okay. Carl did not storm off. He just has to go. I mean, it's getting to 5 o'clock now. I have to go in 10 minutes. So we all have lives, guys. Piotr says, Scrump laid it out last stream. 2001 race riots already happened. Much less people online. And yet there is nothing even approximating a civil conflict. Firebombings are old hat. He says, we need to move beyond law and order mentality. We are not in a war. It's not civil. People are losing. All that matters is organizing, preparing for the war against, certain race. That is what we face. War against whites, she said. Well, I mean, you know, I still think you have to delineate between how much of this is actually happening and how much is just hyper real. Myself. Cringe Walker says, it's not a coincidence that France, UK, Germany, Spain, Italy, etc. have all had their elections shoved up together, and pro-Zion righties are lined up to sweep every one of those places. Yeah, I've noticed that as well, Cringe Walker. Interesting, isn't it? It's like they want them all aligned, you know, a Trump White House with populists in every country, and they want Farage here as well. Le Pen, an organized majority defeats an organized minority every time. Well, there are problems in organizing the majority. Again, Mankar Olson's The Logic of Collective Action shows you why it's very difficult to get an organized majority, because they can never be on the same page, for one. They can't all agree what the right thing is, whereas the minority, especially if they're close-knit enough, can agree on what they want. Intboom says, yo, what happened to 9/11? It is 9/11 today, I noticed. Funny, it's been almost no 9/11 coverage today because events have, you know, there's been big events happening. Meta Britain says, at this point, I've lost all good faith with civil war sloppulists. You can't even settle on a definition. It's just their dark fantasy. John D. Second Drink Groiper says, remember, the enemy want the same fate for each and every one, last one of us. He says, we are ruled by anti-white devils. We need a crusade. Shadow Band says, any thoughts on Nepal's government being overthrown? That's a perfect example of taking away the bread and circuses since they turned off social media. Very interesting. Zoo says, thank you, Dan, your tribute to Charlie. Clearly, thorough research. Please be careful Saturday. The populace is simmering. Left and right out can happen. And Spasticus Autisticus says, for the Marvel stream, which is quite the callback. All right. A couple last-minute ones. Says, Cameron Kirby says, I struggled to sleep last night after seeing that horrific footage everywhere. Truly terrible news. May Charlie rest in peace. And Creed Batten says, cheers, all grateful for your continual vigilance. So there we go. All right. Any final thoughts, gentlemen? Dan?
Yes, I've got a 30-second shill for you recommended I make a slop video about Thomas Skinner coming off Strictly Come Dancing. I have made that video, but it was too funny, so I couldn't put it out today. So that will be going out at the weekend.
Mark?
as always with such things, let's apply the 3-day rule. Let's see where we're at in a few days. Let's see where we're at in a week. Don't post anything stupid. Don't get too down in the dumps either. Let's just see how this plays out.
Yeah, no, I'll just mind people pick up courses at Academic Agency. Obviously, thoughts still with Charlie Kirk's family. And yeah, catch you all next week. Bye, everyone.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.